Hello, I'm Lynn Okhmudu. Welcome to Health Chat. On January 30th, 2020, the World Health Organization's Director General, Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, declared the novel coronavirus a public health emergency of international concern. WHO described the virus, a pandemic, 1 year ago on March 11th, as COVID-19 was spreading to more countries worldwide and death rates continued to increase. I sat down in an exclusive interview with WHO's Director General, Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, to assess the COVID-19 pandemic and its impact in the world the past year. Take a listen.
Dr. Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
On January 30th last year, the WHO declared the coronavirus a public health emergency of international concern and described it as a pandemic on March 11. What are your thoughts on the experience this past year with COVID-19?
First of all, the highest level of public health emergency is what we declared on January 30th. And as you know, we have the international health regulations. And in that regulation, the highest level is what we declared on January 30th. What we did, as you said, in March is describing, you know, the situation since it was really increasing in terms of geography and also in terms of the number of cases. And the lessons learned, I think one very important lesson is, you know, the importance of investment in public health. It covers many of the aspects that we are saying now, which are very important for emergency preparedness and response. And as you know, many countries, high-income countries, were surprised by the pandemic because they have been investing in medicine, in secondary, tertiary services, specialties, subspecialty services. But their investment in primary healthcare, in public health, the basic of public health was really minimal. So countries should really give attention to public health, to primary healthcare in order to prepare for the future and also finish this pandemic. And the other important lesson from the last 1 year is when politics and science is not aligned, there is a danger. In some countries, we have seen that the expert advice goes one side while the political decisions were going the other side. And that was actually helping the virus to spread. So it's very important that we don't politicize outbreaks, epidemics, or pandemics. And the political support or the political commitment should be aligned with science and expert opinion. Then the other important element is a lesson in the past year, not only the national capacity in terms of preparedness and focus on science and helping politics to support science, but also the global coordination has to be strengthened. And also the, you know, when we say global coordination, starting from strengthening from early warning systems. And the other lesson could be the One Health approach. As you know, this virus, of course, it's being studied, could have originated from animals or it could be other. In any way, it's within the animal, human, and the environment interaction that, you know, new diseases could emerge. So taking the One Health approach seriously is very important. But one thing I would like to say is before even COVID, we have started transformation in WHO. And based on this experience, we will add more ideas to improve our system. And we have many mechanisms now, several mechanisms that is helping us to evaluate our situation in this pandemic and understand the lessons and then incorporate them into our systems, be it at national, regional, or global level, for future preparedness.
Although the continent has not been spared by the deadly pandemic, Africa has seen less cases of infections and death compared to the rest of the world. What do you make of it?
I think the combination of many factors actually help. One, the population is young. And second, Africa actually started as early as possible, preparing itself and responding. The early action was not just individual country level only, but it was a continental-wide coordinated effort. That also helps. And the fourth is Africa, our continent, is regularly challenged by many infectious diseases. It could be yellow fever, meningitis, cholera, Ebola, you name it. So the primary health care or the public health system is better prepared. So it can respond fast.
South Africa President Cyril Ramaphosa was appointed as the African Union champion for the COVID-19 response. The country has been hardest hit in Africa by COVID. What is the significance of his appointment for the response on the continent?
I can say that he earned that position or that championship because of what he did in the past 1 year. One of the reasons I said why Africa did better is because of the quick action. And this would not have been possible without his leadership. As you know, the past year he has been chairing the African Union. And I remember the first meeting, I attended that meeting, and to design a continental strategy. During that time, there was only one confirmed case, I think, in Egypt. And he pushed for that early, quick response. And that meeting resulted into a continental strategy. And then he formed a bureau of leadership that's composed of regional leaders from all corners of our continent. And then he immediately appointed a special envoys that can take care of the supply of medicine, mobilizing resources, and people who can lead in other efforts. Very renowned Africans, actually, as special envoys. But not only continental, but he also was leading the global effort. As you may know, South Africa and Norway, President Ramaphosa and Prime Minister Erna Solberg co-chair the Facilitation Council of the ACT Accelerator. And he contributed also to the global response. I'm very proud of President Ramaphosa on what he did, and that's why Africa really fared well. And I know through this appointment he will continue to lead with his colleagues, heads of state, heads of government, leaders in our continent.
Dr. Ghebreyesus, how do you assess the COVID response in Africa?
I think the COVID response is going okay. The first wave was better for our continent, for Africa, actually. The second phase was more serious. That started in January 2021. And then there was a period of starting from late January, started to decline. And now we see some tendency again to increase. We need to do the basic things like what we have been doing, the use of masks, the physical distancing, the hand hygiene, and we need to continue to do that. And we need to continue our surveillance also. We need to find where the virus is and try to attack. So continuing with the public health measures will be important. But I have some concern that there is a slight increase now. It's not a significant one, but the tendency should be taken seriously. But this is not just for Africa alone. If you see the global trend, it was declining until mid-February. And now we can see the last 3 weeks, some slight increase. This could be explained in many ways. As I said, maybe some countries are lowering their guard, that they have to be very careful. Second, it could be the variant, and there could be other issues. So we have to understand why.
How concerned should we be about the variants? How much of an impact are they having on the global strategy?
We have to be really concerned. Because the concern we have is, of course, there is a variant report from the United Kingdom, South Africa, and Brazil. But one question is, are these the only variants we have? And the other question is, you know, whatever number of variants we have, you know, are the vaccines we have now really effective? And then the third question is, you know, how is the behavior of the virus changing with the changing variants? Is it becoming more lethal, or is it becoming less? So I think continuing to understand, you know, the variants is very important, starting from the surveillance, to find out as early as possible when we have variants, understand what their behavior is in terms of their transmissibility and severity of disease. And then we have to understand also in terms of the effectiveness of the vaccines that we use. And we have a network now that's coordinated by WHO, and we're trying to strengthen the surveillance system and also studying the other things which I have already said, but it's a serious concern. And with mutation, as you know, there could be more challenges ahead of us.
It is time for a short break. We'll have more of my discussion with WHO's Director General, Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus. Don't go away, we'll be right back.
Join Issues in the News moderator Dan Raviv and a panel of Washington experts as they deliberate the latest top stories of the week, including U.S. President Joe Biden and other Democrats embark this week on visits to numerous states to promote the benefits of the $1.9 trillion coronavirus relief package Biden signed into law last week. Don't miss Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Peter Klote, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's weekend Africa show that provides news, features, and entertainment news, as well as sports about Africa and the world. Tune in and you will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
Welcome back to Health Chat. On the program today, we have an exclusive interview with Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, Director General of the World Health Organization. Here is more.
You mentioned vaccines. We are seeing COVID-19 vaccines being deployed around the world. What do you make of the access to vaccines across the board, and especially in Africa and developing countries, and the role of COVAX?
Yeah, thank you. The COVAX started, as you may know, as ACT Accelerator with two objectives. And the two objectives were, one, to accelerate the development of products like vaccines, diagnostics, and therapeutics. And the second objective was to distribute the products fairly. I think the first objective is achieved. As you know, in less than a year, we have proven vaccines and, you know, diagnostics and also treatments. The second objective, especially fair distribution, is facing some challenges, especially with regard to vaccines. The first challenge was high-income countries, some high-income countries, not all, started vaccination in mid-December. While the first country, for instance, that received the vaccine, which is Ghana, is in late February. So there is almost, 3 months delay. That's one problem. So that's a problem of vaccine equity. And from WHO side, we were raising the alarm saying this is not right. and we should really share. And the only way to end this pandemic is by making everybody safe. So equity of vaccines is in the interest of all of us, in the interest of all countries. So anyway, we started now the vaccination also in low-income countries, and the number of countries who are receiving the vaccines through COVAX is actually on the increase. So in our continent, I think so far we have around 20, I think, who received. And the target we have is before April 7. April 7 is where we will observe the World Health Day, to have at least all countries start vaccination and vaccinating their health workers and elderly. We have 31 days to go, I think. And we hope we will, all countries in Africa, other regions, will start before then. We have that target. And the second challenge is the number of people who are being vaccinated in the rest of, in especially high-income countries, is on the increase. While the Africa and countries in, you know, low-income countries in other continents are only starting. So we're expecting then another challenge ahead of us, because even with the start of the vaccine, the low-income countries may get less, and their coverage in terms of coverage, population coverage of vaccination could be significantly lower than the high-income countries. And the gaps could be big. So we're now working on narrowing the gap by increasing production. And production can be increased by making use of all the manufacturing capacity we have globally. It could start from voluntary licensing, compulsory licensing, technology transfer, and including intellectual property waiver based on the provisions of TRIPS. We have never experienced anything like this. You know, it's really unprecedented. And all options should be used, including the intellectual waiver of intellectual property. If we cannot use it now, then when? As you know, if we go back and try to see anything like this is 100 years ago, in 1918, to be correct, 103 years ago, when we had the 1918 flu, which immediately after the First World War, that affected the whole world and killed tens of millions of people. Estimated is between 50 to 100 million. And now we're seeing another unprecedented pandemics. So whatever we have to give it. And to increase production and narrow the gaps of rates of vaccination between the haves and have-nots, I think should be now, or should be the same. So we will continue to advocate for that, but the world should really give whatever it has in order to finish this pandemic as soon as possible, so that people can get back their lives and livelihoods. It's affecting the whole world, and the whole world can only lift up together. If there are areas where the response is weak, because, for instance, lack of equity of vaccines, then the virus will get a chance to circulate. And that's why I said it's in the interest of everybody to use whatever means we have to end this pandemic.
Now, Dr. Tedros, having access to vaccine is one thing. Getting people to get vaccinated is another thing. And we have seen a lot of issues around vaccine, with vaccine hesitancy, vaccine distrust. What are your thoughts on this issue, and what can be done about it?
You're right. I mean, there is vaccine hesitancy in many countries. And I think there is a recent study even in Africa that the people who say they can take the vaccine right away are around 70%. So we need to understand why those who don't want to take the vaccines are saying this. Most of it could be because of misinformation and disinformation, and we have to address that. And we have a very strong partnership now with the tech industry, and to address some of the misinformation which is circulating in the social media. So trusted sources can have the presence in the social media, so people get the right information. And the other is you know, leaders should be at the forefront to show that these vaccines are safe and effective. And I have seen many leaders, heads of states, heads of government in our continent who have been taking the vaccinations, you know, at the launching of the vaccination, which really encourages the citizens to follow their leaders. So that I think this way we can address the hesitancy. But for now, to be honest with you, more than the hesitancy, the problem I see is the lack of vaccine equity. So the number one challenge is, you know, having the vaccine. So if we can have the vaccines, and if there is equitable distribution of the vaccines, and, you know, Africa gets its right share, developing countries in other regions also get their share. That's the most important for me, and that will be my priority, to be honest. So let's have the vaccines, and also if we can fight the hesitancy.
And finally, Dr. Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, the USA recently rejoined the WHO after an exit by the previous administration. What are your thoughts on this decision, and how big a difference the U.S. return to the WHO will make in the future fight against COVID-19?
No, the decision by the U.S. Government, the new administration, is very, very crucial, actually. You know, on January 20th, President had signed the letter, and I received the letter, actually, the morning of January 21st. And then I had a call from the vice president, and Dr. Tony Fauci attended the board meeting to also, you know, present the same message. So this is very, very telling how committed the administration is to global health and to multilateralism. And this will be very important for the whole world, because the leadership and the global role of the U.S. is very, very crucial. So it's good for the world, for global health, and it's good for the U.S. also, because the U.S., by working with others, can be better protected. And it's good for WHO too, to do its job. But coming back to the first one, its global role and global leadership. As you know, HIV/AIDS pandemic was a major global health problem. And the U.S. leadership and support and the global role was very crucial. As you know, through the president's PEPFAR initiative and HIV, when drugs were made available actually to developing countries, and also support in other ways, and also through Global Fund, the U.S. contribution to Global Fund was a third, still is a third of the total volume. It makes a difference, but not just the finance, but its role, its leadership is really key, and it has shown it in the past. And in the pandemic now, this unprecedented COVID-19 pandemic, we expect that the U.S. will play its global role too, and that's what we are seeing now. And we have good engagement, good partnership, a very constructive one. We hope the world will benefit from it, and the U.S. will also benefit from it, because it's by working with others that U.S. citizens could also be safe. So it's an investment not just for the rest of the world, it's for the U.S. itself. And that's how I think the administration sees this, and it's very important. And the world is getting smaller and smaller. We're interdependent, intertwined. We are closer than anyone can imagine now. And at the same time, that the closeness, you know, is to really move from one place to other. And the other connections we have is bringing vulnerability. So that's why working together is the only option we have. So we're so connected, but at the same time, we're so vulnerable also. So that's why we need to work together. And that's why, you know, WHO is saying national unity is important, don't politicize this virus, and global solidarity is important. When the two are in action, national unity and global solidarity, then the virus will not find cracks to exploit, because not only the technical expertise and so on, but the politics will also be healthy to drive the virus out.
Dr. Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate your time.
Thank you. Thank you very much indeed. Thank you for having me.
That was WHO's Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus. Now, the race to vaccinate citizens against COVID-19 is ongoing across the globe. But the vaccination campaign has not been without challenges. Germany, France and Italy are the latest European countries to halt the rollout of the AstraZeneca coronavirus vaccine following reports of possible adverse side effects. However, the World Health Organization says the drug is safe. Henry Ridgewell has our report.
France, Germany and Italy joined several other European Union member states in halting the rollout of the AstraZeneca vaccine program Monday.
Today's decision is a purely precautionary measure.
It follows Norway's announcement Saturday that one person had died from a brain hemorrhage and three others were hospitalized with blood clots shortly after receiving the jab.
So far, we cannot speak to whether the cases are connected to the vaccine, but due to the seriousness of the cases, we are investigating thoroughly.
Other countries outside Europe have also paused AstraZeneca vaccinations, including Congo and Indonesia. The World Health Organization says there is no evidence that the AstraZeneca vaccine causes blood clots and urged countries to continue using the jab.
Of the 330 million vaccines doses that have been deployed, we are not aware of any one confirmed COVID vaccine-related death. There have been deaths following vaccination in people, but people die of diseases every day.
Out of the 17 million people in Europe who have received its vaccine, AstraZeneca says fewer than 40 have developed blood clots. The vaccine is a key pillar of many countries' mass inoculation programs. It is relatively cheap and doesn't need to be stored at ultra-low temperatures. Nigerian health workers began to receive the AstraZeneca vaccine Friday.
We don't believe that this information is a reason for us to slow down our COVID-19 vaccination response.
Scientists fear the halt in vaccinations could hit global confidence in the jab.
It clearly has to be investigated. I think the big concern, though, is that we do know that even especially at a time when the disease is still actually very common and increasing across a number of European countries, that ultimately any delay in vaccinations will lead to more severe cases and more deaths.
The investigations into reported side effects could have unintended consequences, says Hunter.
One of the problems as well is that as soon as you start worrying about a particular adverse outcome, then more people are likely to report that outcome, and you can actually almost generate a false impression of an epidemic.
The AstraZeneca vaccine has just received official approval in Brazil, one of the countries worst hit by the pandemic. It has yet to be authorized for use in the United States. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
That's all for this edition of Health Chat. For the latest news and coverage on the coronavirus pandemic, visit voanews.com. Check us out at facebook.com/voahealthchat and let's keep the conversation going. Thank you all for joining us and special thanks to all our affiliate stations throughout Africa for carrying Health Chat. I'm your host, Lino Mudu in Washington with producer Dan Brown. Until next time, take care, stay safe, and wash your hands more frequently and strive to make every day a healthy day. A message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say we can all help fight the corona pandemic by wearing face masks, that cover our mouths and nose when we are in crowded places or areas. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest news on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.